From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 16th day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's with Stuart Peterson. Matthew Roberts is here from the Comerantel Group. He's in Ohio. And join me this morning at the Farm Credit Illinois event in Mahomet. He'll be talking a little bit about what producers should and can do for the 2019 growing season as it relates to marketing. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vakes now joins us from Stuart Peterson to take a look at the marketplace. Jackie, thanks for being here today. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Todd. I enjoy it.
Well, let's start with something you and I haven't done for a couple of weeks, I think. Support and resistance numbers. That'll give us a place to get a good handle on the marketplace.
Well, these are weekly numbers, Todd. You know, so they're, you know, people will say, well, they're pretty big. Well, they are because they're based on the weeklies. But I think it's extremely important that people know where these numbers are. For March, first support is at 354 and three quarters. 323 is next support. And then 303 is major support. First resistance, 387, then $4. And then we still have that gap between 418 and a half and 419 and a quarter. When you look at May, 363 and a quarter is first support, 333 and a half, and then 315. Resistance, 393, 405, and then 423. Now, when we go to beans, this is a little uglier in some respects. For first support, we've got 893. Second is 839, and major support is 757. I don't expect us to get there, but, you know, it's still important that we recognize that these are all numbers that the guys down on the floor are looking at. First resistance, 921, then 963, and then 1003 and a half. On May, we're looking at 906 and a quarter for first support, 852 and a quarter, and then 776. When it comes to resistance, 928, 968, and then 1004. So, quite a lot of changes that have gone on over the last few weeks. Of course, you know, the market continues to look like Great America. You know, it just keeps on going up and down and up and down and up and down because there's just so much uncertainty right now with the government being closed and some of the reports we depend on not coming out.
Yeah, speaking of that, can we stay with USDA for a moment, actually stay with numbers for a moment? Because while the United States Department of Agriculture did not release the crop production and the grain stocks and WASDE reports last week, there were a whole lot of estimates out there. What did you make of them?
Well, when you look at the USDA supply and demand, you know, it was interesting because yield-wise, and I think this is pretty well held in most places, they dropped the yield by approximately 1.1 bushels for the acre, which drives down production. We did see ethanol for fuel go down 25 million, not a surprise, but exports up 25 million. Granted, these are all guesses, but they're usually not that far off. So ultimately, that would give us a ending stocks number of 1.679 billion, which would be down 102 million from the year or the month before from December. Now, if you look at the world supply numbers for corn, not a lot of changes. Basically, production down just a hair, and ending stocks the same thing, down a hair. Not enough to really change a whole lot. On the soybean side of things, the guesses are 51.7 for production, which would be down 0.4 of a bushel, dropping production down. And basically, the thing that that we saw there was we actually saw the ending stocks drop from 955 million down to 920. 920 is still an ugly number, but at least we're going in a direction we'd like to see, down rather than up. When you look at the world soybean numbers, now that's a different story. We did see beginning stocks go down a little bit on the world to 101 million metric tons. We saw production drop, and we saw imports actually drop just slightly. So ending stocks there ended up at 114 million metric tons, and basically that's tighter, about 0.4% tighter on your stocks to ratio. So that's an improvement. Now, wheat, on the other hand, probably saw the biggest moves. We did see exports go up on wheat by 25 million. And therefore, we saw ending stocks go down by 25 million. But, you know, the stocks use ratio on wheat is still huge. It's at 43.7%. And so, you know, if you roll back, let's just make a change or I'll take a look back in 12 and 13. We were looking at 29.9 and 24.2%. So this is, these are still very big, big wheat stocks. And, you know, with the increase in the U.S. dollar value, it makes it harder and harder for us to be able to sell wheat. When you look at the world supply and demand for wheat, basically no change at all, pretty much identical. So, you know, I think from a realistic standpoint, and I'm going to take a step back here for a second, Todd, and I'm just going to go back to, back to beans and take a look at where we were on ending stocks in 12-13 and 13-14. In 12-13, we were down at 4.5%. 14, we were down at 2.6%. And as of right now, well, as of last month, we were at 23.3%. And if the, you know, if these numbers would be close on these estimates, we'd still be at 22.4%. So you can certainly see why the bean market, I think the bean market's phenomenal compared to what it could be when you look at these numbers. So I think everybody's kind of sitting on the edge of their seat waiting to see what's going to happen, you know, with the tariffs, and if anything does change on that side. I think it could be very disappointing for people because we could see big improvements coming out of our situation with China and not see big improvements in price. And so it's a wait and see. We'll find out.
Hey, one outside influence that we've not talked about yet because it happened yesterday in the United Kingdom, Theresa May, who is the prime minister there, and was trying to guide the UK through its Brexit, was voted down just in a dramatic fashion by their parliament. Is there any potential problem that comes here to the United States because of that, or are there expectations that there will be things that happen to us if Brexit doesn't happen, or if it happens just as a pullout?
Yeah. Well, I like how you very kindly said she was voted down in a dramatic fashion. My description was she was pounded in the ground, basically, because, you know, it's 230 votes difference. That's humongous. And you know, so this is probably going to end her career. They're talking about a no-confidence vote, coming and those types of things, although it seems she made it through the last one. We don't know if she'll make it through this one. But the big problem that we've got, Todd, is if they don't have a plan in place, an agreement in place by the end of March 2019, the exit happens anyway. And so if that would happen, you know, the UK's will have no trade agreements because all the trade agreements are made through the EU. Now, this is a worst-case scenario. The ports would close and the airlines would be grounded, because they don't have any agreements with anybody else as far as air traffic goes or as far as shipping goes. The tariffs they used to have would come back into place. As an example, there'd be a 74% tariff on tobacco, just to give you an idea. Even bigger impacts, and this is where it begins to really have ripples for us. You know, London is the financial district, and it would get hit pretty hard because they figured they'd lose at least 5,000 jobs. Okay, well, 5,000 may not sound like a whole lot, but it's currently the hub for all English-speaking entry into the EU. So they would lose all of that. They've been building all kinds of new buildings, and a lot of them they expect would probably sit empty, and that's never a good thing. You know, if they exit, Scotland probably is going to vote to remain with the EU. You know, that's been a really contentious situation to begin with. And, you know, the anti-immigration parties are really strengthening across Europe. And so Angela Merkel has already said she's not running for re-election. So if any anti-immigration party wins either in Germany, France, or both, you could see them exit the EU and therefore, if you take out Germany, you take out France. Those are the two largest and most productive economies they have within the EU and could ultimately lead to the demise of the whole thing, which would be a disaster. So you'd think that they would try really hard to get around this. You know, for the U.S., Brexit has, you know, it's really dampening the business atmosphere over there. You know, these businesses that operate in Great Britain have invested about $588 billion, okay? And they employ more than 1 million people over there. Now, Great Britain has done the same here. So we're talking about the potential for 2 million jobs to be affected if this thing doesn't get settled. And, you know, the problem that they've got is when they took this Brexit vote, basically a lot of the people came out of the countryside, a lot of the older people. They didn't want to see the change. They didn't want to see any of those types of things. And so there's this huge disconnect between the younger people and the older people in Britain. And what will probably happen if they come to an agreement of some sort, now you're probably going to see another vote come up, another referendum come around as to whether they're really going to follow through and do it. So this is a mess, you know, and it's really hurting the economy over in Great Britain. It has slowed them down dramatically, and it appears that they're going to continue to remain slow. So this is a big thing for us. We have to really keep a close eye on it.
Brazil and Argentina, last thing. Crops there have been on again, off again, sporadic rainfall in Brazil, a whole lot of rainfall in Argentina. What'd you find this week?
Yeah, you're very right. You know, they're disappointed because the yields, you know, haven't been as good as what they hoped for on the shorter maturity beans. Just too warm, basically. So this is causing, you know, the final crop in Brazil. Basically, there's a trend right now with almost every agency saying it's going to be lower than last year's record, 119.4. They had expected it to be higher than that. Now, I've been around long enough, Todd, to know that at this time of the year, that's really not, I mean, it's something to talk about, but I've seen them come in here and say, oh, we're going to lose 4, 5, 6, 7 million metric tons, and then we end up with a record. So you just don't know. But I think one of the interesting things that's happening is the Brazilian farmer attitude is just in the dumps. You know, they are not having a good time this past month at all. The weather's been a problem. The yield estimates are going down, of course. Prices have gone down. Their currency is getting stronger, which we all know is that's not a good thing for them. That's why their prices are going down. And the freight rate issue is still unresolved. You know, so when you look at the month of January, bean prices at the ports declined by 4%, and in interior, they declined by 3%. Now, to put that into dollars and cents, you know, you're talking about on Wednesday of last week, the ports, it was 9.17 a bushel for beans, and interior was 8.60 a bushel. And, you know, some people here might say, well, what are they complaining about? You know, that's not so terrible. But just take a step back and realize that a lot of these guys have to pay $2.50 a bushel just to get their stuff to the port. And so that is way below their break-even levels. And so you can understand why they're down, you know, down in the dumps. And you mentioned that Argentina is getting some heavy rains. It's primarily in the north, but, you know, they just can't seem to win. Those guys in the north, it's not a good situation at all.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. That's Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson. Today I'm traveling with Farm Credit Illinois, actually Justin Muhammad, for a morning meeting. And then this evening I'll be in Taylorville with the Christian County Farm Bureau at the University of Illinois Extension Building. That's in Taylorville at 6 o'clock. Show up if you'd like for a Will Ag Marketing Panel. Our panel discussion tonight will include Paul Georgie from Allendale, along with Kurt Kimmel, he's at Bates Commodities, and Merrill Crowley will be there too from Midwest Market Solutions. That one starts at 6 o'clock. Matt Roberts is here. He's with Kermantle Group and spoke with the folks at Farm Credit this morning in Muhammad. He is with a consulting group that works mostly with exchanges and banks. I'm wondering what your message to the producers might be as it relates to agriculture.
Todd, my message is focus less on outlook, much more on planning and marketing. You see, there's so many of these meetings, and I were invited to a lot of these, and they're constantly told where markets are going, where people think markets are going. But if those guys up there talking to you knew that, they wouldn't be telling you that. The more important thing for a grower is, when it comes to marketing, is have a plan. Have a written plan that is laid out 2 years in advance that binds them to certain marketing targets. What I believe very firmly is the biggest mistake that farmers make is they don't market enough bushels early enough. It's not about being fancy. It's not about using options or derivatives or swaps. It's about writing down a plan and sticking to that plan and being disciplined and selling, giving yourself a lot of time to hit those profitable prices.
They'll, of course, say, but what about the drought? What about the problem in South America? How do I take advantage of that if I've marketed too much up front?
It's a great, great point. When it comes to the drought, the key thing is understanding what a drought means. What's your bushel exposure? And there are ways, whether it's insurance, whether it's rolling those contracts out farther, there certainly are ways that we can manage both the drought. The second point, which is, what happens if there's a drought in South America? What happens if Iowa gets hit by a meteor and I miss those high prices? The fundamental point of marketing is to be profitable. And if you're getting $100, $150, $200 an acre, and you take that $200 instead of waiting for that $350, you've got to be content and learn to be content with the $200, because more often than not, if you can earn that $150, $200 an acre, waiting for $350 means you're actually going to sell for $50. And that's the history of commodity markets.
So it's consistency year in and year out in your marketing plan, and that'll give you a better income over time. That's easy enough to understand. Now let's talk about the big picture. Agriculture around the planet, where do you think we are today?
When I look at agriculture around the planet, I think the big picture is solidly, unequivocally positive. The reality is the biggest driver for food demand is wealth. And we are living in the wealthiest, most peaceful, prosperous time since Genesis 3. A lot of people don't realize that when they listen to the news, they look at the internet, they think that the world is awful. But actually, if you look at the data, the opposite is true. People are getting wealthier around the world, and it is human nature that when people get wealthier, they eat better. Not just more. We hear so much about more, but that's only part of the picture. They eat better. And we have a world of increasing, exploding wealth that is constantly eating better. So where's the outlook 10 years from now, 20 years from now? Unequivocally positive for agriculture. The trick is growers have to be doing the things right now to make sure that their farm is still in business and thriving so they can take advantage of that after we work through the current surpluses.
What do you think those are besides marketing ahead?
So the things that I talk about or that I think are most important, first of all, it's not just marketing ahead. That's an important part. It's a marketing plan. It's a disciplined, written set of marketing plan. It's based on profitability. It's based on how much risk you can afford. The second one is get your books in order. Anybody who's been around Extension, I was in Extension for 15 years at Ohio State. Anybody, they've heard, know your cost of production. The reality is that's not enough in 2019. Now it is, know your cost of production at the field level. Drive it down. Why? Because once you start measuring your cost of production at the field level, you're going to start managing your cost of production at the field level. It will revolutionize how you operate your farm, how you negotiate with landlords, everything about it. That's the second step. The third is get your family cost of living in line. Historically, $50 to $75 an acre is what you could reliably take out of a farm. Now, realistically here, Central Illinois, it's probably more like $75 to $100 an acre. But if your cost of living is way out of line with that $75 to $100, then you have set your farm towards a path to failure, or your marriage towards a path to failure. And so really, those are the three things that I believe most strongly what growers need to be doing. That driving that cost of production down to the field is also generally free if you're willing to put the time and effort in. It doesn't even take money, but it takes a lot of time, and it's doing the kind of things that most farmers don't get excited about.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Roberts is with the Kermantle Group out of Columbus, Ohio. When we come back, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason, on the road all week. Tonight I'll be in Taylorville. Don't forget that. We'll start at 6 o'clock with supper. You're invited. Come on out. And we'll have Paul Georgie along with Kurt Kimmel and Merrill Crowley with us. That's at the Extension Building in Christian County, sponsored by the Christian County Farm Bureau there in Taylorville, Illinois. And then tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m., we'll be in Litchfield with Farm Credit and then Jacksonville at the noon hour. We're now joined, see how far I'll have to skate in the next 2 days, by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. How are you today?
Well, I'm all right. We do have a little weather disturbance out there. I don't know that it's going to be much of a big problem. The pattern here is that most of the precipitation is going to occur as rain as we go forward through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow. There will be a narrow band of wintry mixes of precipitation types coming out of the Hannibal, Missouri area and working its way over into the interior portions of northern Indiana. So it'll be a narrow band there, probably not much more than 50 miles wide, where a little bit of rain, sleet, and snow will fall across that region. After that, the system will move out of the way. We'll have another storm system coming in. That'll be a much larger event that will impact all of the Midwest as we get out towards the Friday night and Saturday time period. The odds are pretty high that we're going to see a significant amount of snow occur across the northern half of the Midwest. Accumulations running anywhere from about 3 to around 9 inches and some local totals over a foot. That will be a pretty nasty event. That will be mostly to the north of I-70. South of I-70 will probably have a little bit better conditions, but rain and thunderstorms are likely with that storm system. Again, this will be Friday night going through Saturday and finally ending on Sunday in the eastern parts of the Midwest.
Is this the second in a series of storms that we'll have, or are we just going to go colder after this and not have to worry so much about snow?
Well, I think the cold is going to be a little bit slower coming than what was advertised yesterday, so there will be another storm after this one, and that is likely to occur next week, probably focused on the period from maybe Monday night into Wednesday of next week. And we'll see yet another rain and snow event. It will turn colder after that, and then there'll be another disturbance that comes in the coldest air, but it'll just be light snow and blowing snow across in the region at that time.
Okay, let's get to the agricultural stuff. You got about a minute for South America, please.
Well, most of the South America outlook hasn't changed much. Brazil still has quite a bit of drying going on in the northeast, Bahia and parts of Minas Gerais, the two northeasternmost grain and oilseed areas, very, very dry and getting more so that way. There's no hope for change in the next 2 weeks there. Also, it's drying down in the interior southern parts of Brazil. Most of that area is expecting to see a continuation of drying for the next couple of days, but some timely showers will come in Friday through Monday to offer temporary relief before more drying occurs next week. And Argentina is going to get another shot of rain. We'll see that occur over the next 2 or 3 days, and we'll probably end up with some locally heavy rain adding to the flood problem in the northeast.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Great. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.